Well, actually, the other cliche question that I thought I'd start with, of course, is like this whole number one business, right? Because I'm just sort of wondering, you know, how has it sunk in at all?
Well, I think management makes sure that we're not in the States when the album comes out.
Kind of
keep the swelling down a little, I think. Especially for certain other people in the band. But I don't know. When we get back home, you know, we'll kind of see how things are like developing while we're away.
But when you first heard about it, how did it register? I guess Lars said that they basically just like sent a fax. I guess you were in Budapest or something.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, it was sure we went out and had a drink, but we do anyway. So we just had something else to talk about, you know. But yeah, I mean, everyone was, I guess, kind of expecting it to hit that anyway with the new way that thing works with Billboard. So.
But there's also like a certain enormity that comes with that, that it's sort of beyond just like, it's beyond like having a record that sells a lot and people buy it and da 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 da. It's like that number means something else.
Well, I'm trying to go higher than that, zero. You know? But it was cool that it hung out for like, I think it was 4 weeks or something.
Yeah.
That meant more to me than, you know, actually hitting number one, but staying there for at least 4 weeks, and then, of course, Garth kicked our ass.
Guy comes up with his big black
good old boy, kicked us out of there. But I think it kind of hit me when we did the MTV thing, when after we played it, and we went to this press tent thing, you know, and I didn't know what to expect. I guess Lars had been there earlier in the day. You know, we just got off. We're all kind of hepped up, you know. It was really weird just going on and playing one song because, you know, after the song, it's like, okay, now we're warmed up, you know.
Let's go.
Let's play another one quick, you know, for the commercial or whatever. And but we went into the press tent and, you know, the Elektra girl, the Elektra lady said, oh, you know, should I say number one and all this shit? And I was like, oh, fuck, I give a shit. You know? Number one band, Metallica, blah, walk in. It's like, poof, 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 all these fucking photos. Probably the first, you know, 25 look pretty funny. You know, everyone's like, ah, ooh, you know.
And you know, goofy faces and shit.
Oh yeah, it's like, what the fuck, you know, all in a row. And it was kind of, I don't know, it was like feeling Madonna for 1 second, like what she has to put up with.
Yeah.
But you know, going into the other tents, you know, doing CNN, doing all this wild shit, you know, and we're getting the cover of Rolling Stone this time, you know. So, hey. Some, you know, some pretty cool things are happening.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I guess the thing is that, you know, when people start bands, it's sort of like they always start, you know, they start for a lot of different reasons, but there's always that sort of thing that, you know, maybe someday I'm going to be up where all, you know, the people I dig are, where Zeppelin was and where Sabbath was and blah, blah, blah. Did you ever have any? Was that part of like your dream to actually be there? Was that?
Oh yeah.
Was that part of the goal?
What you mean, being number one? Or
well,
whatever?
It's kind of cliche, but you know that kind of it sort of measures something. It's not even just that, you know, it's number one and it's an ego thing, but there's a certain thing that it measures,
like,
that you've achieved.
Yeah,
something.
When someone says Led Zeppelin, people know what it is.
Yeah.
And you know, someone says Metallica, hopefully they'll know what that is. That's kind of the goal, I think.
Yeah.
But when, you know, younger, that was, of course, that was a thing. You know, you'd see the Zeppelin poster, and go, that's me in 10 years, you know, and my brothers are laughing at me going, fuck off, you know. And when I was younger, that was it. But as the band started going, we didn't really, we got to be number one or else, you know. The way it happened is, I think, the best way it could.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't really striving for it.
Yeah.
And we worked hard, you know.
I guess, actually, the other thing that's sort of weird is that, you know, when you started, you were sort of starting in reaction to a lot of the stuff that was part of that race for the top, and that, you know, you all want to be big and, you know, make number one records, and therefore you got to do this mainstream business. And you were like, sort of like, well, we don't want it. We're not selling out. We're not even buying in. We don't want to know. We've got this other thing.
Right. That is kind of ironic, you know, in a way.
Yeah.
That we were basically wanted to crush all that shit, and we hated it, and, you know. we didn't care if we were any part of it or, you know, radio or any of that shit. And just the way people are going about promoting this album and shit, and I'd have to say the album is a lot easier to listen to for some people that haven't heard Metallica before, you know, compared to the other albums. It's a little easier for, you know, simpler kind of minds to understand the songs, you know what I mean? I mean, the songs are simple, so
yeah,
it makes sense, you know? But yeah, I mean, things came to us instead of, you know, us chasing after something.
Well, I think that's sort of that's probably the sweetest thing about it.
Oh, no doubt.
You know, you didn't do anything out of the ordinary.
That we wouldn't want to do.
Yeah, or that you wouldn't have done on your own anyway, no matter what the reward or the result.
It all comes down to, like, if you're 100% into what you're doing, you can't. I can't be wrong anyway, you know?
Yeah.
If people like it or don't like it, fuck it.
Well, did you feel pretty confident about it as you were making, like, this? The record is quite, I talked with this, about this on the phone with Vegas before, about how, you know, even though it's very much what you do, there is a lot of different stuff about it. You know, it is not Justice Part 2, it's not
Thank God.
Or, like, you know, it's definitely on a different, you definitely took a different road. Was that, how conscious were you? Did you feel that? Well, obviously the Justice thing was played out.
A lot of the riffs were from the Justice tour.
Really?
Oh, yeah. A lot of titles were before, you know, Puppets, you know, around the Lightning days and stuff. I mean, titles. I mean, that has nothing to do with the lyrical content or the vocal pattern or anything.
Like which ones? Just out of curiosity.
Enter Sandman, that title's been around for a long time.
Really?
No one liked it. They hated it. What the hell's that mean? You know? I go, I don't know.
Sandman.
It just, it had a weird thing to it. And this time I found something to match up with it. And what else? What other riffs? Oh my god. What other songs we got on there? I think the Rome riff's been around for a while. Sad but True.
That track sounds like it could have been on Kill 'Em All, really. Because it's got that slow, solid Sabbath
Turn
about it.
Oh, when we were doing the Stone Cold Crazy thing, we were jamming on that at that point. But we were conscious that we wanted to make some shorter songs, and, you know, like I'm sure Lars said, we always wanted to kind of do shorter songs after, especially after the tour. We were playing for fucking so long, and the songs were long, and it was like, okay. We wanted some shorter tunes just to bash out. I mean, Kill 'Em All had some shorter songs, and when we play them live, it's like, wow. I like playing that song.
So, like,
I don't get bored with it myself.
And doing, you know, Seek and Destroy.
Yeah, I mean, I love playing the long, epic-y stuff.
Yeah.
There's a place for them. You know, on vinyl, it's fine. You can, you know, take the song off if you're tired of it. But live, it's like, okay.
Just like a reprogram button on the CD player or something.
Yeah. But I think, I don't know, I really like how the new album, I mean, I like all songs on there. I would have no problem playing any of those live at all. Might have to do some, figure out some extra vocal things for Jason and Kirk. But that's what's fun. That's what, like, the challenge is, you know. And of course, we don't want to reproduce them exactly like they are on the album. That's pretty damn boring.
Yeah. Well, when you said that, like, the riffs, some of the riffs are old, were you writing those riffs almost in reaction to what you were playing every night?
That could be. But I mean, writing a short song has nothing to do with the riff, really.
Yeah.
That's just up to construction.
Yeah.
And when Lars and I go in and fiddle with the stuff, trying to put the different riffs together. the riffs are a little more simple, I think, than what we got into, at least on Justice. More open chord kind of stuff here and there. It's a lot more challenging, you know, as a vocalist to try and fill up these big holes, too.
Well, the other thing that's kind of interesting about having, like, simpler, as in, like, not as many riffs per song, is that, you know, it means that you're really risking a lot on one or two things. When you listen to something like Blackened or Justice or any of the stuff on that album, you know, you can be impressed by how much is there, even if you don't necessarily go crazy over specific things. It's sort of like this whole package that goes whizzing by, and it's like really impressive, like, wow, they do all this. Whereas if you pick that one riff, you're sort of risking that every that this is going to be solid.
Yeah.
How did you then decide which ones we're gonna cook?
You just know. I mean, when you're, especially when I'm sitting there trying to fiddle with a riff, I know when I ain't going anywhere.
Yeah.
Or if I have something. And shit, we have 8 riff tapes each. You know, we gotta sit down there and, you know, go through them. I mean, Kirk has about 8 riff tapes, but they're all like 3 riffs. You know, he keeps playing the same one over and over, and I'm just like, we get the idea, Kirk. You know,
trying to sneak it past
him. Yeah, it's like, gee, that sounds familiar. Yeah, that was on the last tape. See, it's catchy, you know. But I don't know. That was. I mean, people think it's a lot safer, you know, like this album, oh, it's really safe in this, but it's definitely not, because we're, like you were saying, we're risking it all on, you know, one or two riffs, you know.
Instead of like the sort of superficial, impressive, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the
we're real
challenge
hot
for
jazz
the,
guys
yeah,
or some shit.
The challenge for the kid is to try and remember what part's next, you know, or some shit like that. Some bands get pretty far out there, and I can't even figure this shit out nowadays.
But when you were actually sitting down with the tapes, when you were actually constructing, you know, what was going to be the songs, how did you sort of decide which, you know, riffs were going to make it, which riffs were worthy of, like, really concentrating on, which would be sort of like maybe a bridge? You know, because you've got some changes, but, you know, by sort of narrowing what you were going to work with, you really, you know, when you decided it was going to be like, we're going to play all our cards with this. Like, how, like, are there particular songs that would be examples of how you made those decisions? Not to be too sort of scientific about it, but.
I don't know, like I was saying, you know kind of what's a good bridge riff and what's like a meaty, you know, like a main kind of riff.
For example, Rome, like, because that goes actually through a couple of changes too.
It's pretty much based around the same thing. I mean, the main riff, you know, is the same as the intro, except done, you know, lighter, and I would like a beer, please, Carlsberg.
Okay, but I'm very sorry, I can't serve you just as well. I can't serve you on tennis.
Well, we're doing an interview right now.
In the bar, just now.
We can't do it.
It's club rules.
You got a tie I can put on?
A t-shirt?
Sure. Is that wrong?
Stranger things have happened.
Two times?
Yeah.
Dick. Who books us in these joints? But, a tie with a t-shirt? Fucking fashion police will come in here and arrest us.
I think this is a great idea. I think we should
really
just...
Oh, yeah.
One beer?
Sure, yeah.
Orange juice.
All right,
well,
pink.
Ginger ale. I'll trade you if you like. This is pretty nice.
All right. Oh, that's not right. No,
actually,
I like the pink one.
You like the pink one?
How do you do this, man? You better...
Do you not have...
No.
Follow me.
Okay.
That's sort of like a Jacob Marley thing. You're the Charles Dickens, right?
Okay, I think I know how to do this thing.
Okay, put the fat in.
Over.
Over that.
Uh-huh.
Put it around the other way.
Huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sort of doing this mirror image wise, but okay. I'll take the fat edge, go to the skinny end, swing it around. Swing it under. Okay. Now, put it like that.
Okay.
And then through.
Hey,
and down in the front bit. Like that. Nice just down one. Through the front bit. And then just leave it like that.
Dig it, man. Now we're happening.
Oh, where's the photographer?
Hey, that's not right. Okay, here we go. All right.
Now we're smoking.
Now we're styling. Look at that. Okay. What were we saying?
We were talking about Rome. You said there's the basic riff, and then there's like another part that's kind of like.
Yeah. Well, Sandman's kind of the same thing too. Going lean in it. I mean, that builds up, and that's the main riff, and that's actually the B part also, and the chorus is just open chords from the same kind of modulation.
Yeah.
So I mean, Sandman is like the most simplest song we've ever written, I think. Next to. Yeah, that's got to be it. What was it? What were we talking about? Oh, what's... How do we put riffs together?
I know how you put riffs together, but I think, you know, that obviously there was a severe editing process this time.
Yeah. I mean, it is... It's kind of... If I was Kirk or Jason, I'd kind of freak. I think I'd want to be there the whole time, you know? Why aren't you using my riff and da-da-da-da, you know?
Yeah.
But they, as much as we tell them, they might not understand that we don't look to who wrote what. I mean, it's what's best for the project and the band, and it's always been like that. When you put on a tape, you know, that's a great riff. We'll use it, you know. Whose is it, you know? Who cares? It's not up to... And people were saying, okay, you know, why isn't there a fast song? You know, why isn't there an instrumental? It's like, well, what do you mean? Well, because we did it on the other albums, we're supposed to still do that shit, you know? You know, there's no really thrash song on the album. It's like, well, we didn't really have any great fast riffs. The other riffs that we had on the album we thought were better.
Yeah.
Slow or fast, whatever they are. And there were a lot of good riffs. That's why we ended up, I guess, with 12 songs on there, you know.
Yeah.
It was pretty strange. You know,
it's almost like you had better riffs because they were good enough to hold their own.
Right.
You just string them together like, you know.
Right, exactly.
Like a string of pearls or something.
Exactly, that's a good point. I mean, probably, if, you know, Justice or any of the other albums, we could have made, you know, 12 songs out of all those riffs, but, you know, just spread them out a little more. But... But when we got down to like 10 songs, it's like, okay, we got 10 riffs. Okay, that's good enough, that's good enough. Then we got, oh, but this riff's really good, you know, let's write another one. It's like, oh shit, you know. I'm sitting lyrically going, oh fuck, you know, I can write 12 songs now. Well, we don't have the token instrumentals, you know.
Yeah.
My night off, you know, right there.
Well, you know, we talked a bit about the Bob Rock thing before, but the one thing that actually Lars mentioned was that he felt that, you know, in a way, working with Bob really sort of freed you up a lot, that you really felt that he encouraged you to be a lot more open and a lot more, you know, not just, I guess, in performance, but in singing, and I don't know how much that has to do with, you know, the lyric and all, but certainly the way you express them is a lot more... I don't know. The thing that I keep thinking about is there's a certain vulnerability that I really like about it, because you have sort of a reputation for being very sort of, you know,
stubborn.
Well, I think stubborn. Just, there's a certain sort of hardness that people sort of associate with you, which I think is part stage presence and part, you know, the sound and. And certainly, if you put you and Lars together, you know, the difference in personalities is pretty drastic as well.
Well, having someone like Bob say, you know, that's really cool. When you're not too sure about it, you know, you want to try something like that. But when you don't have someone outside the band going, that's really cool, you know, maybe we could do this. And you know, a lot of people thought, you know, working with Bob is Are they going to be really safe and nice, and the songs are going to be nice? It's like, well, shit, we've gotten more wild on this album than any of the other albums,
yeah,
as far as experimenting with different things, you know? There's loads of, I mean, the orchestra, the singing on certain songs, and...
Yeah, you said there were, like, some cellos or something on Unforgiven? Is there on Unforgiven?
Yeah, there's a couple on Unforgiven, but mainly Nothing Else Matters, the huge... orchestra thing.
So is that actually a real orchestra?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. They like our ties. Yeah. Orchestra. Oh, but mainly some of the singing stuff. Just going in and, well, I mean, we had the songs pretty well rehearsed when we went in a couple months before. Bob came to like production rehearsal, I guess what you want to call it. And we sat in a little room and he sat down, you know, and heard him, you know. And he's got a feel.
To work with.
Yeah, here it is. Right. But he, you know, it was good that he got to know the songs before we went in and all this. And at the start, it was like, wow, Bob Rock. You know, we fiddled with some sounds and got some pretty good stuff, you know, going on the tape. You know, it was not like, oh, we'll save it in the mix kind of stuff. It was like, this is really good on the tape now, so we don't have to fuck with it later. And, you know, we were kind of going, well, what the fuck, you know, what's the big deal about Bob Rock? Why is he so good? What, you know, I don't know really what's going on right now. But towards the end, when we started embellishing the songs, you know, adding things, and that's when he started to really shine through. And it's like, fuck, this guy's good, you know? I mean, and he is a guitar player, so it was extra kind of fun for me to experiment with things. And with vocals, you know, we'd go through the song a few times, warm up and this and that, and we'd lay a couple down, and I'd never recorded vocals this way, and it's, I guess, how everyone else kind of does it. They have, you know, here's like 8-10 tracks or whatever, fill them up. Just run through the whole song, and there's a lot more personality in it that way, instead of, you know, do a couple lines, stop, oh, you know, I screwed this word up, punch in here. And instead of one master track, going and getting it just perfect, you know, and then going back and doubling the vocals, which is what I had always done before, which I didn't do on this album.